Good morning, Kingston. This is Queens Pro Bono Radio, CFRC 101.9 FM, and on the web at cfrc.ca. We are not lawyers. We are not giving legal advice, and nothing we say should be constituted as legal advice.
Rick Rigby, model citizen of Canada and poster boy man for justice. During the day, Rick Rigby worked as a mild-mannered trial judge, rendering good-natured judgments for the betterment of society.
Death.
But then, one day on the bench, he was bitten by a radioactive tortfeasor.
My arm!
Rick Rigby ran out of the court, feeling an unbearably strange tingling in the recesses of his mind. He stumbled through the alleys of Canada when he was suddenly confronted.
Give me all your money, you stupid judge!
No, it's my money!
Give me that money!
Rick Rigby's head began a throbbing, and it was at this very moment he realized he was no longer merely Justice Rick Rigby, for he was now adorned with a fantastic ability to tear people's arms off.
My arm, see!
This is incredible. Why, with these powers, I could be a superhero. I strive for world peace, love among mankind. Tear their arms off.
Now, under the cover of night, he takes to the rotten streets. Armed with his adamantium gavel and donning a menacing powdered wig, Rick Rigby becomes The Masked Legislator, starring Rob as Rick Rigby.
I find the defendant guilty.
Also starring Jordan as newly turned 18-year-old twin love interests, Pear O'Legals.
Oh, Rick. You're more hung than any jury.
And Dan, as villainous arch-nemesis, Dr. Undue Influence.
Convince people to enter into contracts they wouldn't otherwise enter into.
A true monster, ladies and gentlemen. Now, stay tuned for this week's episode, an entry into the canon of legal contemplations, Superhero Law.
Awesome.
Good work, guys. Okay, so we're talking about superheroes and the law, supervillains as well, and all sorts of legal questions that come up about this.
We got this idea from a website called Law and the Multiverse, and it is written by an attorney licensed in Missouri named James Daly, along with another fellow who is licensed in Indiana. His name is Ryan Davidson. And they come up, they have a website here that discusses superheroes and villains and the actions that they take and their legal implications.
Well, it's very important because superheroes and supervillains, you know, exist in our universe. It's not outside of...
Excuse me?
You didn't know that?
Superheroes exist in our universe?
Well, I'm just saying that the setting that they operate in is Earth as we know it. And Earth as we know it has all sorts of laws, legislation, and they just don't really take those into account. So I'm very glad that these people have addressed this fact. There's all sorts of things.
That and it's also really interesting to look at this site, especially as a law student, to try and learn some new things and to relate it to the material that we have. So,
well, much of the stuff that I do on exams I have taken from this website.
Yeah, and I discuss superheroes a lot on my exams, so.
Cool. Absolutely. Sorry, but just reiterate, what website is that?
This is lawandthemultiverse.com.
So the question is, some supervillain, he's taken over your mind, he makes you do something illegal. Do you have a defense when you go to court, you know, in Canadian law?
So are we talking like a crazy Dr. X?
Well, I don't know.
Professor X Daniel.
Mutant mind morphing. No, who's the Alpha Force? Alpha Flight guy.
There are two supervillains actually on Alpha Flight. That is a Canadian comic book. They were trying to integrate into the X-Men universe. They are a bunch of mutants that they come out of Canada. And I believe.
Gnarly.
There is one fellow named Murmur.
Murmur.
He is from Quebec City.
Duh.
And he can influence your thoughts. With bad enunciation.
With bad enunciation?
Well, when you murmur, you're not really talking about very nice.
Well, let's just say Murmur, this supervillain, he takes over your mind, and he causes you to kill another person, and you go to court. What is your defense going to be? You're gonna ask
automatism, me. Buddy.
Well, automatism. There's two potentially.
Depends what he does. And mistake of fact.
Exactly. So if he actually just takes over your mind, you've got no control, and you go kill someone because you're basically operating as an extension of his mind, that's automatism. It's like a sleepwalking, basically. You don't have any control there. But let's just
the reason you have the defense is because you don't have the actual intent to go
no
and kill
There's no voluntariness.
Somebody.
Exactly. No, it's okay. Not intent. It's just voluntariness.
The voluntariness.
It's a difference. Yes, absolutely.
That goes to the
goes
act.
To the actus.
The act itself. Okay.
The actus, right.
But we shall proceed. So, and then there's also the possibility that he just murmurs and just changes the mind a little bit so that you have a mistake of fact. You think this guy's attacking you.
I wonder
not.
How you can understand him when he's entering your mind that way.
Murmuring
go cover up Thompson. I'm sorry. I don't know. Who am I supposed to kill?
So he's not saying kill somebody or do something. Makes it look like this guy is attacking me when in fact he's just a big friendly guy in front of me. You know, he's trying to give me flowers. But it looks like he's got a knife or something.
Oh, my God.
Do you understand what's going on
yeah,
here?
Totally.
Well, I don't... Okay. So there's the two differences here. I'm going to talk to the first one of automatism.
Who's this cute bald man rolling himself over to me in his wheelchair? He's going to be friendly to me. Oh, no.
He's going to give me flowers.
Oh, no, now I got to go kill some people.
So let's just say the supervillain. Let's be serious here, guys.
This is...
We're talking about
serious.
Criminal law here.
Yeah, okay.
In Canada. So let's just say the supervillain takes over your mind and forces you to do something, and you have no control over that. I would say that that's automatism. But there's two types of automatism. There's sane automatism and
that's
there's insane automatism. Yes. You don't want insane automatism.
Nope.
No, because then you're probably going to mental facilities. But this will probably qualify as sane automatism because there's a good example of this called The Crown and Parks. It's mm-hmm. a 1992 case.
Absolutely. Do you want me to go over the facts?
Absolutely.
Right? Okay, so basically the accused got up in the middle of the night and he drove to his in-law's house, killed the mother-in-law, went to the police station, turned himself in. The police took him to the hospital and all the doctors verified was that he had been sleepwalking.
Yeah, this was an incredible case that he was able to have like...
He drove something like, what, 20 kilometers or more to the in-laws?
Yeah.
Yeah, while walking apparently.
Sleep driving.
Absolutely. So it sounds very improbable, but the only thing that saved him was that somehow his defense attorney got called on this issue while he was in the hospital. The police had taken him to the hospital.
Well, actually, one of the medical professionals was, I believe, the wife of the defense attorney.
Oh, that's it. Yes,
and
exactly.
She let him know. So he had the step on this.
They all came in. All the doctors verified, this guy is sleepwalking. He's no control over this.
Because he loved his in-laws, allegedly.
Whatever.
I would love my in-laws too, Rob.
But this is not what we're discussing. So, in this case, it was found that he was let off. He was found to have no control over his actions. And thus, he had a defense. Now, we get back to our scenario where murmur has taken over the mind, and I don't have any control over what I do. Presents a situation is if you don't have a lot of verifiable evidence that somebody had controlled your mind. Now, let me just put it more clearly. Let's just say nobody's heard of this bad guy, this supervillain. You face this.
I haven't heard of murmur.
You haven't heard of Bert? Yes, exactly.
No,
so
no.
Let's just say we were to arrive in court at this point, and my defense would be, well, murmur took over my mind and made me do it.
Who's murmur? What's murmur?
There's this thing in Canadian justice called air of reality. Although the Crown has to prove that murmur didn't actually take over my mind, to introduce this issue into the court, I have to have some evidence besides me just saying that it happened to bring into account. So the supervillain isn't really well known. What are you going to say? What's going to happen?
So, for instance, if it was Professor X, or to a lesser extent, Martian Manhunter. If Professor X was to have done something like this, and everybody on the planet knows who Professor X is, the lovable, bald, crippled fellow.
He would never do something like that.
He wouldn't, but let's say he was bizarro
Professor
X. The judge
could be like, oh, God, I know Professor X. Yeah. Of course he did that.
Of course he would do something as horrible as
that. Air of reality, that's cool. Go ahead.
Well, he would have to know that there somebody existed that could do something like this.
But if Murmur comes on, you know, on page, it's kind of like...
I've never heard of Murmur.
I have no idea.
Just
death.
So what you're saying is that you've basically got to have something corroborate your evidence.
Exactly. So there's this little burden that, you know, you got to get over first. And you know, if this supervillain is just like an up-and-coming supervillain, he's trying to make his name, and he's just made you do this, then you're kind of SOL on this issue.
You're just going to be behind the prison bars.
Murmur made me do it. I'm not guilty.
Everyone's going to think you're just absolutely insane. Yeah. Okay.
Nothing is better than the smell of trees older than Jesus. Chop them down, boys. Ethan Allen needs that press board furniture by the end of the week.
But, this loot and plunder, sir. You sure we keep doing this? What about Captain Planet?
Scumbag, that baby bluish, light, greenish... Help me out here.
Turquoise, sir?
Turquoise, scumbag.
What should we do? Don't you remember what happened last time?
He dropped me into an industrial smokestack to teach me a lesson. Some lesson. All I learned was what it's like to cope with tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is rough. All right, people. Let's get moving.
Not so fast, Luton.
Captain Planet!
That's right. The Planeteers and I are here to self-righteously stop your wicked deforestation.
Oh, and how do you plan on getting through my big, burly logging crew?
By teaching them a lesson about the environment.
Curse you, Captain Planet. I will burn this forest down. If Ethan Allen cannot have the trees, nobody will.
Oh, no, you don't, Plunder.
Let go of me, Captain Planet.
We have to teach Loot and Plunder once and for all that our boreal forests are precious and worth fighting for. Only then will the world be safe.
My goodness. I never looked at it like that before. I've really got to change my ways, Cap.
Planeteers, start the wood chipper.
Yay! These lessons have no educational merit.
Oh no, Captain Planet, it's the fuzz.
Have no fear, Planeteers. The authorities will understand the value of the lessons we have taught today.
Captain Planet, you are charged with 50 counts of aggravated assault and first-degree murder for the horrendous death of one Mr. Lieutenant Plunder. But you are only doing what every sane environmentalist would do. Therefore, in the light of necessity of your actions for our planet, I find you not guilty.
Wow, did you hear that, Mr. Gore?
Way ahead of you, Skipper.
Okay, so this is going to bring us into, basically, the defense of necessity. So, with regards to the murder charge, there is a case, Dudley and Stevens, that would basically say that the defense of necessity is not going to fly.
Dudley and Stevens, where'd that come from?
It's a UK case, and basically what happened is that it's actually famous. It's law school famous. But four men were shipwrecked at sea, and they're drifting in this lifeboat, right? There's one young man on the boat who's ill, the weakest member. So these three guys get together and like, hey guys, what do you think? Okay, well, I'm getting kind of hungry, so.
Let's eat the kid.
Yeah, let's kill the kid and eat him.
He doesn't have a family.
Exactly. The other guys had families, so, you know, obviously reasonable thoughts.
That's true.
So what they did was they did kill the young man and began to feed on him. And sure enough, the next day a boat comes and picks them up. And so it went ahead and they got charged with murder. And they claim that because of necessity, they shouldn't, they shouldn't be charged with this, and this is ridiculous. And that didn't fly, so they were
in court.
They were sentenced to death, but because of public outcry, it was like 6 months imprisonment later. So basically, that's kind of what everyone relies on is that murder cannot be allowed.
Well, more specifically, I remember the judges were told ahead of time that the Queen was going to commute this sentence. And so they knew that what they were doing was not going to cause these people to be put to death or to be put in jail.
Okay.
And so they came down very hard on the law.
Right, but this set a precedent that everyone seems to follow.
This is the precedent.
Defense of necessity can't be,
ever allowable for murder.
No. But to tell you the truth, in 2000, there's another ruling with Siamese twins, and the court ruled that necessity would legalize the separation of the twins. except, you know, in the face of knowledge that by doing this, you're going to kill the other twin. It's a certainty that the other twin's going to be killed, and it's going to allow for a normal life of, you know, the one who survived. So it's kind of up in the air, and in the Latimer case, they do leave open the question or the possibility that defense of necessity could be a defense for murder.
But generally, the defense of necessity is always available for all sorts of other crimes that
Absolutely.
Aren't murder.
Yeah. So actually, let's
Captain Planet situation.
Sure. Let's talk about Captain Planet, and let's first think about the assault
and other superheroes.
And what happens with the defense of necessity is that it's up to the judge to determine whether there's an error of reality, like you were talking about before.
Absolutely. Oh, error of reality.
So there's three requirements
unpack
that have to have
the error of reality for us, Dan.
I'm going to unpack it.
Unpack.
So it has to be whether it's reasonable, you know, whether this could be put to the jury and the jury could find them not guilty.
Can I stop? So we're just going to back right back up. So any superhero in the world that, you know, has to do something and says that he was saving something greater or doing something for a necessary reason, this might be his defense in law in case he gets brought before the courts.
Yes.
Sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting.
But all Superman cut the top of a mountain off once.
He cut the top of a mountain.
There was a... you're right. There was a big volcano going off in Superman 3, and Superman had no other choice but to use his laser vision to cut the top of a mountain off and to plug the top of that volcano.
My God.
So all we have is a plateau, and plateaus are not nearly
as let's get
as
back
beautiful.
To Captain Planet.
We need to get back to the law.
So the three requirements, if you're going to put this defense forth, is that you have to show that there was imminent peril or danger.
Absolutely.
So if we're thinking about Captain Planet, when he chains the loggers to the trees, okay, or assaults
What's the
them,
imminent peril?
Well, the fact that, my God, they're going to cut down 2,000-year-old trees in the boreal forest.
I guess that was going to happen right away.
And that was going to happen. They had the chainsaws going. So, you know, Captain Planet, being this crazy environmentalist that he is, it's reasonable to say that he saw an imminent danger.
I would agree any objective viewer
I guess at a point, it depends on what point of time this is. If this is maybe, let's say, a couple hundred years in the future when there really is an issue of deforestation when destroy all of mankind.
That is the second step. We're just talking about the imminent danger.
Yeah. This is imminent. I mean, if they were to cut down a few more trees and people would have no more oxygen.
No. I think you're confusing the first and the seventh step. The first step is just...
No, second step's legal alternative, so I think he's confusing it with the proportionality.
The third step,
Either way,
can we... Let's move on.
I'm not confused.
The only listeners, he's confused.
The only ones that are confused are the listeners because you're not letting me go on. So the second stage, assuming we have an error of reality on the first, is the accused must have had no reasonable legal alternative to the course of action that he or she undertook.
Well, then that obviously hit my alternative.
Well, so, Captain Planet, I guess at this point, he was being threatened by 50 big burly men.
No, he wasn't being threatened. The forest was.
He came down and they said, do you think you'll be able to get through me and my big burly logging crew? Now, I imagine they will all kind of at once turn to him with their chainsaws and their axes and their big, hairy fists. And they would attack him. It was going to be that is a self-defense issue
hold
as well.
Hold on.
What?
One alternative. Okay, let's just say.
Fire it at me, Dan.
Maybe him and the Planeteers could chain themselves to the trees. They didn't have to chain the.
There's only six of them. There aren't. I mean, they can't. They can't.
Okay. So
chop little pieces of the Planeteers up.
Maybe on the assault charges, it's reasonable. But for the murder.
Yeah, okay. For the murder.
Are you trying to convince me that Captain Planet, for all his powers, was not able to do something else to remove the loggers besides chain them to a tree?
He's not that powerful.
All sorts of legal alternatives. So,
I think that all Captain Planet can do is fly. I don't think that he has anything...
No, and then he just makes ridiculous
comments. He's just got a really horrible skin
confusing
problem.
Let's just say on the assault charges, it could be reasonable about what happened, you know, chaining them to the trees. But the murder... Come on, the murder was not really reasonable.
A
legal alternative would have been like, maybe we should arrest him, or we should, you know, send him into outer space at least.
At the very least, chop his feet off.
Just to clarify for our confused listeners, there's three steps to the necessity.
Yes.
One being an imminent danger. Two being there was no legal alternative. And three being proportional.
Yeah,
that...
okay. So the third one. I'm gonna talk about this, okay? This is my defense of necessity, Robert. So
Dan's got this.
What happened here is in the third requirement, it has to be like the harm has to be proportional. The harm avoided, has to be proportional to the harm inflicted. And this is done solely on an objective standard.
Absolutely.
So this is going to be harder for Captain Planet to, you know, work this with.
Sounds very
Because
hard.
If people don't think that it's, you know, reasonable that he threw loot and plunder into a wood chipper to save some trees.
That would happen.
That's what happened, yeah. And if they don't think it's reasonable, or the community doesn't see that as something that, you know, is acceptable, then Captain Planet might be in a pickle here. In terms of the assault, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think the assault charges were you know, proportional to the harm inflicted, such as if the trees were burnt down or cut down?
These are boreal forests, you know? These could be the last ones.
But the furniture Ethan Allen makes is so... They make such precious pieces.
That's a very good...
God, I love my cabinets.
So once again, like every single legal argument, it depends.
It solely depends, yeah.
It depends.
It depends.
And does necessity have air of reality, too?
Absolutely, yeah.
So the persuasive burden is borne by the prosecutor in this case?
Yes. In terms of getting the defense put forth to the jury...
Got
to
get over the evidentiary burden.
You know, that's on the defendant. Because the defendant has to set up this air of reality in each requirement. And if the judge feels like, Captain Planet, you are totally nuts and you just killed this man.
Doesn't go to the
trees. And that furniture's beautiful. Then it might not be put forth to the jury and Captain Planet's going to see some time in prison.
He'll be in prison. Yeah. Or he's going to be in the rings again. Doesn't he, like, come from the rings? Where does he exist?
They all put their rings together.
They put the rings together and he comes out of the
ground. Earth, fire, wind, water.
Yeah, and they tried to kind of fudge it so they get another ethnicity in there and so they have heart. What kind of element is heart,
well, actually,
anyway?
You know, as Captain Planet says, hate is one of the most toxic pollutants.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I saw that episode, too.
Yeah.
Mr. President, there's an emergency in downtown Canada!
Oh my god! Call Superman's Rhea!
I came as quickly as I could!
Oh wow, it's Superman's Rhea! The superhero who intends to do everything he does!
That's right. Whether it's my ice breath to freeze a villain in his tracks, or my super speed to make fast, efficient love to a woman, it's always by intention.
Ooh.
Thank God you're here. General Fundamental Justice is on the loose.
Not again. What's that dirty pumpkin up to this time?
He's kidnapped all of Parliament, the House of Commons, the legislature. My enormous caucus. Everything.
Oh my god. But that's against the law.
Mr. President, it's him.
General Fundamental Justice?
I believe I have your intention now, Mr. President.
What do you want?
Open the door and you'll find out.
Aha! Now I can tell you my evil plan face to face.
What do you want?
All in good times, gentlemen. But first...
Tell us now or I'll...
Don't intend to make one more step, Superman's Rhea. See this.
Oh my god. He's got the Constitution.
A keen eye on you, Mr. President.
That's breaking the law.
Not anymore. See, I've amended the Constitution so that I can do whatever I want. As of this day, nothing I do will ever be illegal again. So, if you'll excuse me, I've got to attend my charity cockfight with my 6 new wives. That's right, darlings. We don't want to be late.
You've got to stop him somehow, Superman's Rhea.
You're not going anywhere.
You can't hurt me. It's against the Constitution. No, no.
Consider it repealed, General.
You punched him right into the ocean.
I think even the fish would find the general guilty. Pun intended. The adventures of Superman's Rhea, the hero who intends all that he does.
Oh, I get it. Because it's a fish and there's gills.
You got it, Robert.
Guilty.
Now, our final segment here tonight is going to be about indestructibility. So let's say, for instance, that you have somebody like Wolverine, who is one of the comic book characters who is extremely difficult to kill. And now, let's say that we had another villain, Pyro. His goal was to, let's say potentially, kill Wolverine. Yet, because of his mutant powers, it could not. So, if it is impossible for a given action to kill a potential target, does it constitute a crime?
What a great question.
I guess you can't, intend to kill someone.
Well, if he's intending and it doesn't kill him anyhow, does it still constitute, let's say, attempted murder?
Does he know that the person's indestructible?
That is the question. That is the very good question.
Here's the thing. What I have difficulty with is that if he intended to kill him the first time, okay, or the second time.
Well, let's go right now to the first time. Let's say the very first time that Pyro ever encountered Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
They came face to face.
Right.
He extended his fist, shot his fire into his face. Now, it would be what's called in law a factual impossibility. Now, so that means by fact, it would be impossible to kill Wolverine this way.
But he doesn't know that.
He doesn't.
So
but his intention...
I want to say that's attempted murder.
His
he
intention,
intended
yeah.
to kill him.
His intention is to kill him.
Well, do we have anything in law to back this up? Like,
yes, we do. We have a few American cases over here, and we also have a Canadian case. Now, the a really great American case we have over here is that there was... It's called the People versus Lee Kong. And he was tried for... He was found guilty, actually, for attempted murder for shooting a hole in the roof, believing that the victim was there, when indeed the victim would only... He was there moments before, but he had moved away from that spot. Mm-hmm. So the accused had intended to kill Lee Kong. Sorry, Lee Kong is the one who was shot him. He intended to kill whoever it was he was intending to kill.
Right.
It's all sound like questions. Intended to kill Lee Kong.
So he
is
intended-
that how I talk? Do I not talk with proper punctuation in my voice?
Lee Kong had intended to kill this one person.
He didn't actually kill him, but his intention was to have killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So can they try him and convict him for attempted murder, even though it was a factual impossibility? Here's a better example. There is a wife who wants to kill her husband. So she puts some arsenic inside of his coffee, but by accident she confuses it with some sugar. And mixes in some sugar into his coffee.
How did she do that?
Making it tastier. Now,
how did they prove that she'd intended that to be arsenic?
Well, everybody puts
because she
arsenic
called.
Inside
she called. She felt guilty
jar.
About it. She felt bad about trying to kill her husband. So she called the police and turned herself in.
That was stupid.
So
after he didn't.
In
die.
Retrospect, so it's not the fact that she made a mistake and it was an impossibility that she could actually kill him, but the fact that she had intended to kill this man.
Right.
What happened?
And that intention. Well, it turns out that factual impossibility is actually not a defense to anything of this sort. The Canadian equivalent case, there is a case called R. and Ledieu, and this is where he intended to fornicate with somebody. The issue was that he thought that it was a live human female when in fact she was dead.
Oh, man.
So that's the thing, is are you going to convict this man of... necrophilia? Are you going to convince him? Are you going to convict him of rape? See, there is something else. It is a factual impossibility to convict him of. This is horrible stuff.
So getting back, so
that's awful.
So if it's impossible, but you still meant to, you would get charged. So this Pyro guy, he didn't know at the time that you couldn't kill Wolverine. Well, I'm sure some will dispute that you can kill Wolverine, but.
You have to chop his head off, allegedly, and remove it far away from the body so it can't actually regenerate.
Okay, thank you. Perfect. But
I know my
didn't know at that time that you couldn't do this, and so he still had that
intent,
and therefore he is guilty.
Mm-hmm. The fact that he attacked him but couldn't have killed him is irrelevant.
Exactly.
The fact that he believed that he could kill him is the point.
Yeah,
over
and
here.
Here's the thing that I have issue with, right? So let's say he's not charged with attempted murder on the first or, you know, the second try or whatever.
Exactly. And even if he does know that by the second time that it is dangerous and it would harm him severely. I mean, whenever you see Wolverine regenerating himself after a horrible car crash or after being shot at by some lasers or when I think it was Rogue who went up to him and said, "Logan, does it ever hurt when those claws come out of your hands?" And Logan replies,
"What'd he say?
Oh, God, what'd he say?"
"Every time, sweetie."
It hurts every time.
It hurts.
It hurts.
He's in pain. You could also see the pained look on his face.
He's got spears
that could just be,
coming out of his
It's probably
skin.
Like emotional pain, too.
He is not a very happy person.
He's probably like, "I got kidnapped."
Oh, that's why he's so mad.
"I've got a better skeleton than everybody else, but I'm still just not quite fulfilled." You see,
I
you understand?
Can't die.
So Pyro could, in that sense, if he knows that... if he knows that it would not kill him, but it could definitely cause him quite a bit of substantial pain, he could still be convicted of something like aggravated assault.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you go, folks. Just because you know that he's invincible, you'd get in trouble. I'm just putting
some way or the other, you would.
Yeah. Just be careful.
Everybody, I want to thank you for listening to Queens Pro Bono Radio. It was our pleasure to talk to you, as it was your pleasure to listen to us. We are CFRC 101.9 FM, and on the web as well at cfrc.ca. And please just recall that we are not lawyers, and we are not going to give you legal advice. Nothing we say should ever be constituted as legal advice. Have a good day, Queens, and Kingston. Tonight, on Interstellar Legal Adventures, we present Tortfeasers from Beyond the Stars and the Grave.
I am Galactrox, committer and eater of torts.
What's a tort, guy? Galactrox, this is candidate president. We apologize, but we must ask you what it is you want.
I am here to commit libelous slander against your species, you smelly ninnies.
Galactrox, that was uncalled for.
What are we gonna do, James?
Don't worry, Mary. There's still one last hope. The law. I'll be right back.
What's this? Flying in through the Earth's atmosphere, it's Captain Justice, with his perfectly sculpted legislative body, and using his highly expensive legal expertise, Captain Justice seeks to put an end to interstellar crime.
Fear not, I shall save the day.
Blind to partiality.
Everybody is equal in my laser vision eyes.
And blind literally.
Oops. Ah!
It's beyond a reasonable doubt that he's awesome.
Galactrox, I'm here to put an end to your tortious tyranny.
Captain Justice, you'll best stand back before I commit battery upon your beloved President of Canada.
Unhand me, space demon.
You wouldn't harm Canada's beloved president.
Oh, no?
How?
You can't stop me, Captain Justice. You've got nothing on me, and you know it.
On the contrary, I met out justice on the balance of probabilities, and according to my evidence, it is highly probable. You're a jerk.
Captain Justice, wait.
Mr. President, you must stay back.
Captain Justice, it's Mary.
Mary, you must stay back.
You can't defeat Galactrox like this.
What do you mean, Mary?
You can't impose our laws on this space monster. We haven't ratified the Intergalactic Sanctioning Treaty.
Hot dog, Mary, you're right. This is outside my provincial jurisdiction. I'm unable to prosecute.
But the criminal code doesn't say anything about evil space invaders. I guess you could just shoot them.
Okay, I will.
A gun! You knew my one weakness!
Oh, thank you, Captain Justice! You saved us!
Don't thank me, Mary. Thank my gun.
Intriguing stuff! Will Captain Justice ever successfully ratify the Intergalactic Sanctioning Treaty? Tune in next week for another thrilling episode of Intergalactic Legal Adventures. Good night, Kingston!